I'm Denise.
She's a non-fiction editor.
And I'm Louise.
She's a fiction editor. And together,
we're the Editing Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Editing Podcast. This week, we thought we'd reflect on this year's Chartered Institute of Editing and Proofreading's conference.
And if you're one of our Tier 2 Patreon supporters, there's a special bonus episode where Denise and I are going to talk a little bit more about how we tackle conference presentation nerves.
Because we both presented at this year's conference, although the format of our sessions was very different.
Yeah, it was. Why don't we start by chatting about something that was a big highlight for the both of us, and that was the buzz of the CIEP conference.
Yeah. It was really buzzy, wasn't it?
It was. It was. And I think the CIEP conferences over the years have always had a good vibe to them, but this time felt different, and I can't quite work out why, but it did feel really, really special, didn't it?
And I honestly can't put my finger on it either. We've been to that venue before. There were a lot of familiar faces, which is lovely. The structure was slightly different, which was nice. And maybe it gave us more space, I think.
Yeah.
Even just headspace. There were fewer streams of multiple speakers.
Yeah, the conference were a bit shorter this year, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it was a bit shorter. And in the sort of breakout sessions, I think there were just three speakers to choose from rather than four, which maybe just reduced that feeling of FOMO or overwhelm or whatever. Mm. But there was just a really nice vibe to it. And I think that being in person is nice, isn't it?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Being face-to-face is just lovely. It brings... I heard one guy, one of our colleagues, saying that getting together like this just brings him so much joy. And
yeah.
I think it is that thing about sort of hanging out with, part of it's about hanging out with people who geek out over the same things as you.
Definitely. And more than one person said that about, I'm getting my grammar all mixed up, for whom it was their first conference. So I spoke to quite a few first timers, which was really nice. Nice to see new faces there. And several of them commented about how it was like, you know, meeting their people.
Definitely.
I think it was lovely to experience that through their eyes. It was the first time that they'd been in a large group of editors who all care about words and language and the value that we can bring to that. Yeah,
that's really interesting that you mentioned that, actually, because it is lovely to catch up with familiar faces and old friends. It really is. But there is that whole new thing about it being a really kind of safe and cozy environment to meet new people in as well. And especially, as you said, like for the first timers, you know, it's a big deal for them. Often they might be going to an event that they don't know anybody, and or they've just seen names of people online or in forums or on social media, but actually they're going into an environment that's completely new to them. And so it's really nice to meet people and provide reassurance for them.
Yeah, and I'll tell you another thing as well. It was nice to meet quite a lot of young editors who were quite a bit younger than us.
Yeah.
because it made me think, oh my goodness, yes, these are people that are still coming into the profession, that still want to do it and are looking to the future. But, you know, they're not.
Yeah.
I think sometimes when you hang around, it's that echo chamber thing again, is it? When you hang around with editors who are maybe have been doing it for a long time, are very experienced, sometimes they can be a wee bit jaded a little bit. Mm. That can creep in, especially when I think it's been a difficult couple of years for a lot of editors with AI and cost of living changes. Mm. And I think a lot of people are quite pessimistic about the future of editing. And it was lovely to meet enthusiastic, relatively new entrants. And I'm not saying even in terms of age, although it was nice to meet young editors, but just people that were coming into it and that were fresh and new and enthusiastic. I think that gives you a real boost.
And had different perspectives and come from, you know, bringing different industry insights to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, not necessarily, because like you said, when you spend a lot of time just hanging around with people who do pretty much what you do, then you do end up in that bubble of, mm. of kind of, all, this is my world. Was in actual fact, we you know, we were meeting people who worked in house, but there were yep. also people who'd worked who'd come in for completely other spaces than the publishing industry.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't involved with publishing before this. And there were various reasons why they've made the decision to take up an editorial role, but they weren't all. It's just like you've got an interesting background. Now, I came from a publishing background. That's all I've ever really been in. But, you know, you obviously used to be a physiotherapist. And just whenever when you start building networks, when you've got people who've come from different industries, then you start to learn just about the way yeah. they approach business and way those organisations approach yeah. business as well. So that's really useful and just reminds you that, yeah, just because we've done things in our business is one way
yeah.
doesn't mean they have to stay like that, doesn't mean we can't flex and be adaptable, and
absolutely.
Just really, it's just a really, really nice thing.
Yeah.
The other thing I was thinking of was that when because you were talking about structure earlier, but I do love the in-person element of it. For me, that's really brilliant, but I do like the fact that our conferences, the CIEP's conferences, are still hybrid.
Yes. So, yeah,
you know, you don't have to be in the room.
No, and we know because we're involved in the council, we know what a lot of work it is to make that a really good experience, but it's so worth it, you know, bringing in...
And how expensive!
And how expensive! It's scary expensive
yeah, yeah.
to bring in
yeah.
External AV consultants, but they absolutely make the difference. We make use
really
of
do.
Members to host sessions and...
Yeah, the volunteers were
volunteers
brilliant this year.
A massive difference, but... To make it a really crisp online experience, I don't think you can beat bringing external people. Mm. And I think the online participants really appreciated that as well. I think
yeah.
really nice comments.
The feedback yeah. I heard that was really, really, really good, that they had a great time.
Yeah.
And so that was fantastic.
And it was nice at the very end as well when we did the raffle. We have a very inclusive raffle where... online people are involved as well, that we saw
yeah.
them on the screen, which was
yeah,
really nice.
Yeah. yeah, that was a first, wasn't it?
We had never done that before. We've always yeah. had our big big wheel of fortune on the screen, but we've never actually seen the winners, which
yeah.
was lovely. Yeah. Yeah. yeah, yeah.
The other thing was that I think felt slightly fresher this year was that there was a lot more variety in terms of the kind of various different options available for learning. So
yes,
it wasn't all yeah. lecture style seminars. There
yeah.
was workshops and roundtable discussions and online Q&As. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where we've benefited from our office staff having external experience of, you know, running events like this and
yeah.
knowing the alternatives and the different options that we can have to deliver a really varied
yeah.
event.
And that was a yeah. thing, wasn't it? Because our head of professional development, Sarah, was really keen this year when they started mm-hmm. looking at the programme to make sure that that there was variety. And they nailed it, the office.
Yeah.
They really did.
Yeah, yeah. One of the highlights for me was Ellen Jovan's film.
Yeah, we had a film! Applause. We
yeah,
had a film!
It's the first time we've had a film.
I don't know if we can expect that every year.
I doubt it. No, unless somebody's got a film in the planning stage at the moment
yeah.
that's going to be ready for next year. But that felt yeah. really special.
It really did. So if anybody hasn't seen it, it's basically Erin and her partner, Brad Johnson, going out and various places around the United States of America with what they call the grammar table, and people can just come up and ask Ellen any question they like about grammar, and she just answered. So she just really represented editors well, didn't she?
She was an amazing advocate for editors, and she was amazingly, what's the word I'm looking for,
well, she was unprescriptive. That's
yes,
what I noticed.
Uh-huh. That's the word I was grasping
descriptive
for.
Descriptive yes. rather than prescriptive. So
recognizing that there are lots of Englishes and there's
yeah,
no
yeah.
often no one way to do something.
Yeah, sometimes things are a stylistic choice and mm-hmm. you've got options. And she was really good at giving sort of really user-friendly examples as well.
Yeah,
and
what amazed me was how engaged and how passionate quite a lot of these members of the public were about their opinions, but also how open some of them were to learning about new things, well, new to them things that we understand, but were absolutely new to them. And
sometimes they did understand things, they just didn't know the name for it, or they understood a lot more than they realised, but they were just sort of checking in with her.
Yeah.
And
I know it's been on limited release in the States, and Ellen has been shown it at other editor conferences. But it would be lovely if it could get a broader screening. I think it should be in art house cinemas across the UK so that I can recommend it to all my friends. But
you certainly don't have to be an editor to enjoy it. It was just a really great documentary.
I have to confess, when we sat down and we realised it was an hour and a half long, I did say to you, that's awful long. I thought this was going to be about 20 minutes or half an hour. I don't know if I could sit through an hour and a half. Well, it absolutely flew past, didn't it?
It did. It did. I was feeling the same way, and I just thought, oh, that's a long time to sit in the cinema, especially when the seats aren't quite as comfortable and I haven't got any popcorn. But
we were not well prepped.
We were just there, weren't we? We were just like totally invested in it, because the way Brandt handled the filming and the way Ellen handled her conversations, it was just a joy to watch.
It's beautifully edited. It was. He'd done an amazing job of pulling it all together. Yeah. So felt really quite special. Yeah.
It did. So just a reminder for anybody listening, that's Rebel with a Clause. It's a great film title.
Yeah. I think she's got a book on it as well, though.
Oh, has she?
I think she has. Yeah. I might be making that up, but was she not a book signing or something, or a reading from it in one of the clips?
I don't know. I can't remember.
If she does,
sure you're right.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Better go check it out, yeah. But yeah, I felt that this, just going back to the overall structure, the way it was spread across the 3 days, with the afternoon, then the full day, and then a morning, it kind of added up to the same amount of time, and it was kind of two full days, but it felt less pressured as well, I think.
It did. I felt a lot less tired at the end of it. I'm not sure the staff would agree with that. No. They must have been exhausted because it obviously, but I felt a lot less. I certainly didn't come away from it thinking, oh, that's, I've had enough. You know, it ended just at the right time, and it was nice that it ended at lunchtime as well, so that there was still light when you, for those people who were leaving that day.
And I could leave and get home to Glasgow that day, which is not normal. Yeah. I usually have to stay an extra night. I don't know. I mean, I haven't been to any other editing conferences, so I've got nothing to compare it with. But I have spoken to other editors who have been to other editorial conferences, and they have commented on how much more relaxed the CIP conferences, and how much time there is for networking and speaking to people, which there's definitely space. I know they had special interest group networking in person, but there's just time in the programme just to sit, because there's a nice outdoor space.
There was a nice outdoor space and there was also a nice bar area. I think that's really key, actually, having a space that people will naturally gravitate towards to socialise. And I've forgotten, we haven't mentioned the human bingo. So any other editors listening who are members of other organisations, and you're wondering how to get your, particularly if you have got new faces and people are networking and you want to sort of provide real spaces in which people can really comfortably start talking to each other, especially if you've got a lot of introverts, human bingo is the way forward. And it basically works like, I don't know, a cross between that kids game who's who and bingo. So you know we all had author names, and we had to go around and find all the other author names on our card,
on our bingo cards, which were all different. Not everyone had the same one. And it transpired, Harnby, that there were several different approaches to how you played this game, and I did not agree on this, did we?
No, and yours took about 10 hours longer, whereas mine was a right laugh. I was just going, I'm Agatha Christie! I'm Agatha Christie! I'm Agatha Christie! And are you Harper Lee? No, you're not. I'm not talking to you.
No, I was much more, I would say, prescriptive about the rules with this. So I think this was what Sarah and Jess had originally intended with it, which is if you go up and ask somebody questions about...
Yeah.
You know, if it's on if you got Agatha Christie on your bingo card, you say to somebody, did you write crime mysteries, yeah, whodunits? And then they say no, so you know they're not Agatha Christie. Are you still alive? Things like that. I was Zadie Smith, and I would not give anyone away. I would not give that away to anybody until they correctly guessed who I was.
Yeah.
And that, I was just that made for some engaging conversations with people about whether they had read Zadie Smith or...
I was having a right laugh, though.
So was I. But I was engaging.
Well, let's just agree to disagree.
Absolutely.
But because I think that the thing was, it didn't matter which rules you were applying.
Exactly.
It worked. Exactly. Everybody was
the place was
just chatting
buzzing.
And... It was. And so that's such a great way to get people to socialise. Really, it's a massively quick icebreaker.
And I have to say, I usually hate icebreakers. I feel that they're forced and kind of artificial, and they're putting you in a position where you're having to be something that you're not, almost, when you're trying to be creative about what you're thinking. This takes the focus off yourself. So you're not having to talk about yourself, but you're still having to engage with other people as much or as little as you want. Like, if it's, you can just go up and say, who are you? And they'll get an answer. And then if that's all that you can cope with, that's fine.
Or it's not that I couldn't cope.
I know
I just thought that was the way.
That was a speedy version of it that you were doing.
Speed human bingo. Anyway, it was a cracker.
It was.
But so, another thing that was a cracker for me was your session.
My session.
So why don't you tell listeners what you did for the conference?
So I hosted a Q&A with the CIEP's Honorary Vice President, Susie Dent. And for those of you who are outside the UK, I think if you're in the UK, you probably know who Susie is. She's a lexicographer. She's on TV. She does lots of TV programmes there's comedy programmes. There's Countdown, our classic Dictionary Corner, she was in for years. She does 8 out of 10 Cats, does Countdown with Jimmy Carr. And she's written loads of books on lexicography, very accessible. She writes children's books as well. She had a podcast.
She's a podcast.
It's finished now. Her podcast is no more, but it's still there. And it's got the most amazing title, which is Nothing Rhymes with Purple, or What Rhymes with Purple? And I know the answer to that because I'm Scottish. It's Herple. And that is a word. Anyway, I'm getting off the topic. But so it was the Whitcomb Lecture, which is the opening session for our conference. It's the first big thing that we usually have a guest speaker at. Now, unfortunately, Susie couldn't be there in person, so she dialed in via Zoom. So she was on the big screen and I was interviewing her and everyone was in the room. The weird thing about the setup was that she was on three big screens and I was at a lectern. And she was behind
me. And you couldn't look at her.
I couldn't see her. because for the online people and for Susie herself, who were all on Zoom, I had to look at the camera. So I was looking at the camera. So if I turned to look at her on the screen, everyone would just see the back of my head. So I had to pretend that Susie was in the camera. So I'm doing lots of nodding, smiling at the camera.
It worked really well, though. I think you pulled it off. For someone watching that, it really did look like you were having a conversation with her.
I'm really, really glad about that. Obviously, I haven't seen the recording of it yet, but what did help me, although I didn't realise it till a good halfway through, was that behind the camera were windows and I could actually see the reflection of the screen in the window. So I could kind of see her in a way.
So you sort of see her, yes.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a Q&A, which I think I did about 40 minutes with preset questions with her that I had agreed with her. And then we opened the floor to people ask questions from that.
What I love about Susie is that she has this way of talking to camera in a way that you come out of it later and you realise you've learnt loads.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like that at the time. You just felt like you were sitting in a front room with her or her living room or a lounge or something, having a cup of tea or a glass of wine. Yeah. She's got a really lovely, warm presence about her.
She's a very generous interviewee.
Yes, she is, isn't she?
She shares such a lot of information. And as
she's very honest as well,
she is,
she's very human.
Yeah. And she was very honest about her relationship with her editors, very complimentary as well. And she's just recently written her first fiction book.
Novel, yeah.
Yeah, but as an interviewer, it makes all the difference when you've got somebody like Susie who takes the time to prep well.
Yeah.
Because she'd quite clearly thought about the questions that I had sent to her ahead of time, had very comprehensive answers prepared for them, but did not sound like she was just reading off a script.
No, no.
You know, she's probably said these things loads of times anyway, so she could just... Mm. But she knew what was coming. She knew what she wanted to say.
Yeah.
But she ad-libbed loads as well, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a great interviewee. And, you know, I very much hope she'll come back and maybe do something similar with us next year because it's a real highlight.
Yeah, and I think she really set the tone for the conference as well. I think that helped too, is it?
Yeah.
Being warm and accessible and, you know.
Yeah. She kind of really encapsulates the CIEP's values of, you know, about just that sort of connection and community, that which is our the vibe that we're, you know, as an institute, we're very keen.
Totally leans into that, doesn't she?
Yeah, she really does.
Yeah. So you did a workshop on, I need to know, tell me that title again.
6 Lyrical Tools for Fiction Line Editors.
Okay.
So my session was a workshop and it was all about basically helping editors practice their line craft by being able to identify. We focused on 6 particular tools or rhythmic devices. So it was about being able to identify them and explore kind of the impact they have on a sentence or a paragraph and how that rhythm shows rather than tells emotion. And I have to say, Denise, I was quite nervous about it because I've presented in the past, but I usually sort of give a lecture. You know, I've got a bunch of slides prepared. And this time, the success of the session was entirely dependent on the participants, because if they didn't do the exercises that we were looking at, or they had nothing to say, it was just going to be really flat. And,
so had you never done a workshop? Was this your first time doing a workshop?
It was my first doing a workshop. I've always done more structured.
Why did I not realise that was your first workshop? That must have escaped my notice. I don't know how. I can understand why you were nervous then, because that's entirely
because you are.
Different.
It's not just. It's not the same as when you prepare a lecture. It's up to you.
Yeah.
If it falls flat, it's because your slides weren't any good. It's because you haven't done the work.
Mm.
But if you do the work and you do the prep and you've got all the slides there and you've got your notes and you know your stuff, really, I know that different people have different presenting styles and obviously some people are just more charismatic and so they're better at it. But, you know, you can do a pretty good job just and it's all down to you. But when you're reliant on the room...
That is different.
But they were brilliant. Oh. They were brilliant. They were so... And we had people online as well, so they would feed questions through the host and they would provide answers. And so basically how I handled it, the exercises, I put line numbers by these written texts and people were able to look at those and then sort of call out like, well, this is how I would have done X, Y, or Z. And it's that line, la, la, la. And everybody else could see it on the screen. Mm. And then people would discuss it and they worked in groups. But they also then a group would share their findings and we just got we had a real mixture in there of people who were very new to fiction editing, but also some really experienced fiction editors, It really is because sometimes, you know, you might have someone who'd even gone off track or a bit off piste and decided that suggested a deletion, which wasn't sort of in the brief, but they had suggested something. And then one of the more experienced editors would say something like, oh, I wouldn't touch that because and then explain why.
So
you had all these different levels of experience in the room and different approaches, and it was just a really great reminder that while there were several occasions where everybody was finding homing in on the same stuff, there were also times when people had quite different ideas and approaches to things. And the really interesting thing was that the excerpts I'd given them to analyse were things I'd written. So essentially, I was having my own writing critiqued.
And how was that?
It was great. It was great. You know, I wasn't worried about that at all. You know, I made it quite clear that I'd written them, so they weren't necessarily going to be
I think
selling author standard. But
I think workshops are one of the most useful formats for editors to learn from, because like you absolutely said there, you're learning, you're not just learning from whoever's leading the workshop, you're learning from the other people in the workshop. And sometimes that's where the gold is, because you're getting so many different perspectives.
And also, as you, the person who's leading the workshop, you get to learn too.
Absolutely.
So you've set all these questions and these tasks for people to do, and you end up sort of thinking, I didn't think of that. Wow, they spotted something there that I hadn't. And so often when you're presenting something, it can feel like you actually miss out on the opportunity to learn.
Yeah.
Because you have to take the lead. But that isn't the case in a workshop. And I would definitely do it again.
Oh, that's good. Because I've done, when I now think about it, I think almost everything that I've done has been kind of workshop based.
Yeah.
I haven't really thought about that, actually. But I think I just wanted to say that for people who are listening who maybe shy away from workshops in this sort of setting, who are maybe intimidated by the thought of having to share their opinions on things, or you know, or work in front of people, I think try and get over that somehow if you can, and be brave and attend, because you get so much from them. I think it's easier for somebody to say, especially if they're not very confident about speaking in front of other people in that sort of setting, or feel vulnerable about sharing their opinions of things. And let's face it, as editors, we usually share our opinions with our clients or our authors, not necessarily with other editors. But getting the chance to see how other editors work and how they think is so valuable. And I think anyone who's been in a workshop situation would say the same thing, that you can learn such a lot from everybody else, much more than you do from, like you say, lectures or those sort of...
One person's voice,
just,
isn't it?
Yeah, and you're just set to receive as well. There's no interaction there. You're just receiving information. So, you know, no matter what editing conference you might be thinking of attending, I would definitely seek out workshops wherever you can, because I think that's where the real value lies in honing your craft.
The other thing about those is that they're often, especially at a conference where you're limited for time, it can feel, I suppose my core takeaway from that was, if you're asked to lead a workshop and you're given only a quite a short amount of time, like an hour, really, really think hard about what you can provide people with beforehand. Yeah. So I put together a big bundle. I had a booklet. I had another exercise people could do. I had loads of other information that I included in that as a sort of pre and post conference bundle, which meant that during the session, we focused on a single core theme, six tools, two exercises, bang.
Yeah.
And it meant we got the best use out of that time.
Yeah. It's so important because you'll have experienced this as well. There's nothing more frustrating than being in a session, whether it's a workshop or, you know, a seminar or a lecture or whatever, and whoever's leading it knows a huge amount and is just trying to cram far too much in.
Yeah.
And you end up being overwhelmed with it, and you end up not switching off almost because there's just too much. Andy, my husband, who does presentation skills training, whenever I'm doing a talk or a session at something, and you always go through that phase of, oh, I don't know where I'm going with this, and there's just so much, he's always like, okay, four things. What are the four things you want them to leave your session knowing that they don't know when they come in? Even make it three if you think it's going to take too much time. Don't worry about everything else.
Yeah.
Just think about what they're going to take away. And I find that really helpful, because I think a lot of us tend to want to share everything we know about a subject, because how else can somebody understand what you want to tell them?
Yeah.
They have to have all the background and all the extraneous bits. But actually, you can narrow it down and filter it down to some really core takeaways that are actionable, and people will appreciate that much more than being overwhelmed with a tidal wave of new knowledge that they can't process.
And especially if, you know, someone's trying to give all that knowledge and then they run out of time, and then that's such a shame as well, because you think, you know, it's a lost opportunity. So it's really good to hear a professional like your husband is endorsing that approach, you know, like being niche, less is more. So The other thing I think that we both got some core takeaways was around the value of the editorial profession, which was the theme. That was the theme of this year's conference from the CIEP, the value of the editorial profession. And so a lot of the sessions, although they were very different and different topics, they were about focusing on suggestions and solutions for editors in a world where AI and the economic situation are affecting us all. And it was great to see speakers and delegates not shying away from the AI challenge, but tackling it head on. So what do you think, for you, was a core takeaway?
I think looking broadly at the whole conference, I felt there was a real sense of optimism for the future, funnily enough. I think there's been a very strong narrative, with good reason, of negativity and pessimism about AI and the future. And I absolutely don't want to minimise that, because I think there are absolutely valid concerns. And I know that some of our colleagues have experienced a downturn in their work as a direct result of AI, but it's not going away. And we have to learn how to work with it. And I know some of our colleagues do not like to hear that, and they think we should just be saying no to everything. And that's their choice. And if that's their choice, I respect that. But certainly in where I work, in a lot of educational editing and publishing, AI is there. AI is being used. And I cannot remember who it was that said it in their session. And I've heard it before. It wasn't the first time I've heard it, but they brought it home to everyone as a reminder. AI is not necessarily going to be the thing that takes our jobs. It's editors that use AI well that's going to take your job. So we have to learn to embrace it. And, well, not embrace it, but understand it and learn how to either use it or work alongside it or pivot somehow. I think that was my main takeaway. Yeah. And to be honest, there's still a good number of the sessions I've not seen, but just listen to what people were saying coming out of sessions the chat around it. It felt much more, right, okay, this is here. What are we going to do about it to promote ourselves? And that's where that humanness, absolutely, it was running through everything. Yeah. Which I thought was really interesting. What about you?
I agree with you. That about the learning and experimenting with, so that we don't get left behind. But also, as you pointed out there, recognizing what its limitations are, but also whether it's its limitations or whether it's our limitations. And I suppose that leads into the thing that for me was the big takeaway, was that you and I have been banging on about this for years, but more than ever, we have to make ourselves visible. We have to make our human selves visible, because it's that we can use to draw people's attention to us. And I think that finding ways to be explicit about that human connection that we bring, that the authenticity that comes with that, the ways in which we as humans can be cultural arbiters and handholders, and I think that's really important. And also, just sort of leading on from that, thinking not just about search engine optimization, but as one of our colleagues said in her session, Debbie Emmett, about answer engine optimization. So when you're optimizing the text on your website, you're not just thinking how other humans are going to read it. You're thinking about how AI and GPTs are going to be perhaps scouring the content on your website and using that to answer questions that people put into it and ask it. And you want to be one of the people that it's citing.
Definitely.
And I mean, I don't know about you, but I've been tracking my queries.
Yeah.
People who come to my website and want information about my rates and availability have to fill in a little form. And the only thing that does is it enables me to see how they find. I don't do anything with their emails. I don't contact them. It just enables me to see, and I'm seeing a really big upshift in people not just using Google, but using AI. They're finding me via AI. And so I think it was really important that I was really glad to see people talking about that at the conference, about how we market ourselves, how we make ourselves visible, how we bring that humanness to the fore, so that people understand the value that we bring to the table.
And that's, I think that's always been the case for the sort of marketing that editors do, but I think it's become even more important now. And if I may, I shall just plug our Notes from the Podcast series, because we've talked about this all through the podcast for years, and we've distilled that information down into our five books. And the marketing book in particular talks about how you can be human in your marketing. So I think if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, maybe I have to step up my marketing, I'm not really doing much, but maybe I need to do more, maybe I need to tweak it, have a look at Notes from the Podcast Book 5 on marketing, because that distills all that information that we've shared with you over the years. But you don't have to trawl through 146 episodes to find it first, which is why we wrote the books in the first place. So a little plug for the books there, Louise.
That's a really good way to end. We really hoped you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget that if you're one of our two-tier Patreon supporters, you can listen to a bonus episode in which we're going to talk about ways we overcome conference speaking nerves.
Thank you so much again for supporting us by listening. Until next time, she's been Louise.
And she's been Denise. Join us again soon.
Bye.